Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The margin of error on today's jobs report is 100,000. 100,000, everybody. So let's all just take a deep breath, shall we, and try to figure out what the numbers really mean? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 2nd of November. Good to have you with us. And I'm going to give you the headline number for the unemployment report right here. I know you've already heard it. 171,000 new jobs last month. Great, good, nice, even. Now, I want you to forget it. Because next month, the wizards at the Bureau of Labor Statistics are going to change their minds. They're going to give us a new October number. Because they don't actually know right now how many jobs the economy created last month. And those revisions, as they're called, they are the deep, dark secret to knowing what's going on in the labor market. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going today with the margin of error.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics figures out the number of jobs based on a survey they sent to 140,000 businesses. How many workers did you have last pay period? Was it up or down? But of course, not all those businesses send the paperwork back on time. So as economist Angela Clinton explains, the BLS estimates, then adjusts as more surveys come in.
It takes a relative change in the sample and applies that to the prior month's estimate. And then everything is seasonally adjusted.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
We do not need to understand the math here. Bottom line, though, the job creation numbers catch up eventually. The job market's been improving since early summer, and we were adding more jobs than we thought, says Nigel Galt at IHS Global Insight.
171,000 jobs this month, and we now have an average of 170 over the past 3 months. That's better than we've been used to seeing.
And right now, this trend is helping the president, says Princeton historian Julian Zelizer.
I think if President Obama's reelected and the economy really does take off, he certainly will get credit. Then it becomes a story of his presidency, a tough first term, doing what was needed, and finally his policies take hold.
What if the other guy wins?
The credit will fall to Romney. He would be the president who orchestrated the recovery that was impossible when a Democrat was in the White House.
Of course, recent job gains could be a fake-out. Then whoever wins faces a lot of hurt for an economy that's still not putting America back to work. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If ever there was a week to take a minute, 4 minutes, actually, to recap what's been going on out there, this is it. So here for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond, we've got Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. She is in our studios in New York. Sudeep Reddy from The Wall Street Journal is down in Washington. Hey, guys.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, so Lee, on Mitchell's last point there about whoever wins gets credit for the recovery, you buy that?
I do buy that. I mean, I think
you sound doubtful.
We'll do this.
Own it, I mean, man. You got to own it.
No, I think a lot of this is because of what's happened over the past 4 years. You know, we've already regained back half the jobs that are lost. So we are already in a recovery. So it's the seeds have been sown. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 4 years. But, you know, I think that a lot of this groundwork has already been laid because we're in a recovery.
In a recovery, yeah. You know, so Sudeep, there was a lot of talk about, you know, a year after President Obama took office about when this was going to start being his economy, when he was going to own it, right? How long is that going to take if there's a change in the White House? How long will it take for Governor Romney to own this economy or President Obama to say, you know what, I own this now, this is mine?
I think it takes for a new president at least a year before you actually get a sense that their policies have had some chance to work. We saw that with President Bush and the jobless recovery we saw back in the early part of the last decade. Mm-hmm. We saw that again now. Whoever gets the big win on Tuesday will inherit an economy that is fundamentally better than it was 4 years ago because we were in a severe crisis back then. And we've worked through a lot of the excess, all of the overburdened households in terms of personal debt. A lot of that has been worked through. And so time has healed this wound somewhat.
Somewhat, he says. Hey, Lee, so the fundamentals of this report, the rate going to 7.9 and the fact that it's 171,000 jobs for now anyway, how much does that explain what's been going on the past couple of months in terms of consumer confidence rising, consumer spending rising? I mean, now it all kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. And it really is a continuation. For the past 3 months, we've added an average of 140, 150, maybe even a little more jobs. So those are good numbers. I mean, you know, definitely in a growing economy, you want to be looking at like 250 to 300,000. We're very far from that still. But these are a marked improvement. And it does explain a lot of what people are seeing on the ground. And they're spending more money. They're feeling better about the economy. It's very regional, though. I mean, what you're seeing in places like Michigan is different from what you see in places like, you know, North Dakota. Or even Ohio, frankly.
Yeah. Speaking of regional, you're safe from the storm, right? I mean, did it get you?
It got me in the sense that I have no power, but I have a very generous colleague who's lending me her apartment. But I'm very, very lucky. I mean, it's been a rough week.
You know, I
to
bet.
Say the least.
Yeah. Bigger picture, though, even if it goes as high as $50 billion the cost for this storm, is that a big hit to the national economy, do you think?
You know, it'll definitely take a toll. I don't think they're saying a fraction of a percentage of GDP. We'll feel it. We'll feel it. But I think that much in the same way that New York is resilient, I think that the economy will be resilient and get through this in the end.
Yeah. So, Deeb, let me ask you the Washington question of the week, which is what's the mood down there, man? It's like 3 days from the big day.
Everyone is extremely nervous, but also very excited about getting past this ridiculous election season because we've gone through the silliest of phases in this entire cycle. And now we will actually be able to look forward to a big fight in Congress over the fiscal cliff and getting through some real policy, which will be incredibly important for the course of the economy. And that's what everyone is gearing up for now.
All right. Well, since you brought it up, and unfortunately you have like 11 seconds to answer this question, do they actually fix the fiscal cliff at the end of the year, or do they push it into like March, April, May?
I think they will push it because they will come to the very last minute and realize they can't allow a disaster to strike just yet, and then they'll let the disaster strike at some other time down the road.
Perfect. Sudeep Reddy from the Wall Street Journal in Washington, disaster later down the road. I love those. Sudeep Reddy in Washington and Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine in New York. You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks, Kai. You too.
All right, we'll see you. On Wall Street today, traders took no great joy in that jobs report. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Natural disasters don't generally play favorites. You know, you're in the path of a storm like Sandy, it's going to get you no matter where you are on the income curve. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, Sally Herships has our story.
The day after the storm, I went to Red Hook in Brooklyn. It was a bad scene. The neighborhood is right on Gowanus Bay, and when I visited, water was spurting out of a crack in the sidewalk. An entire block of businesses was trying to bail water out of their basements, often without light.
Are you wearing that? Did you just turn on a headlamp?
Yeah, these things are like gold around here right now. Having a working headlamp is, that's why I've got three around my neck.
Sinjin Frizzle owns Fort Defiance, the bar and cafe on the corner. He says the flooding destroyed tens of thousands of dollars of food, wine, and restaurant equipment in his basement. We went downstairs to take a look.
It's really slippery in here, Sally, so be careful.
Oh, it is slippery.
We're going down into the basement now. Lamp.
Oh, my God, that smell. Wow. Yeah. That is a smell.
The floors and the stairs of Fort Defiance are covered in black, stinky goop.
The water completely submerged the basement. It was wet up to the roof.
This is like, I just have to say, this is something surreal because what we're looking at right now is a flooded basement and there are lemons and limes floating in the water like something out of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. My ice machine is canted at an angle back there. Can you see that?
And the beer fridge was also knocked over by the water.
And those things have to go.
Yeah, those things are trash.
Frizzell says he doesn't have flood insurance and can't cover the costs without help. A few blocks away, I found Octavio Cadiz hauling trash to the curb in front of his house. The basement of his brownstone was completely flooded,
He and his wife lost personal items that can be tough to put a value on. So tell me, so what's in these bags?
What's in those are a lot of my wife's collectibles, some stuff we had in the back room.
Like what did she collect?
Well, my wife collects ornaments, and she had a bunch of stuff that she brought from storage so we could stop paying storage fees. And she did that less than a year ago, and it's all in the garbage.
Cadiz is a payroll coordinator at a law firm. He says his brownstone is a family home that he couldn't afford with his income, which he says is far below the 1%. But no matter where you fall in the wealth column, there's only so much you can do against a flood. And are those sandbags by the door?
Those are sandbags that we try to use to stop the water, although 4 sandbags doesn't do much against 4 feet of water.
The weather is a great leveler.
Drew Kerr says he's in the top 20 to 35%. He lives in Scarsdale in New York. It's a nice place to live. But still, he's been without power, heat, or hot water since Monday. Kerr's mother-in-law had been staying with his family for the storm, but then the heat went out. His family decided she would be more comfortable in a facility for seniors, one with heat and a bill, $130 a day. Then he says there's the challenge of keeping your business running during a hurricane. Kerr owns his own public relations firm.
You know, the other day was the end of the month, and that's normally the day that I send invoices. And I didn't think it would send the right message, so I'm going to wait another week.
For right now, Kerr and his wife and kids are roughing it Scarsdale style, eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in their cold house.
I'm sure there are people that are much worse, and I'm sure I know there are people that are much better, but we have to make do.
Kerr's kids are stuck at home and bored, so he took his teenage daughter for a ride while he charged his cell phone in the car. He said they drove around Scarsdale and looked at the homes of other people with backup generators. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Coming up, Nashville and the GOP.
Hey, Barack, pack your bags, head to Chicago. Take your trailer pumping with you so you'll know where to go.
Yeah, it's another election year mixtape, but first, let's do the numbers. Well, here you go. The Dow Industrial slumped 139 points, 1%, 13,093 at the bell. NASDAQ off 37 points, 1.25%, finished at 2982. The S&P 500 declined 13 points, 0.9%, ended things at 1414. For the storm-shortened week, remember, only 3 trading days. The Dow gave back 0.1%. The NASDAQ slipped 0.2%. The S&P 500, though, it gained 0.2%. Continued job growth couldn't buoy the market today, but supercharged corporate earnings did help some familiar names buck the trend. Starbucks shares bucked up 9%. The day after the coffee chain reported strong sales and raised its dividend. Priceline jumped 8.3% today on some strong earnings. TripAdvisor rose more than 19%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.71%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a glance at events coming up Monday. It's election eve. Both campaigns want to rock your vote. President Obama will appear with Bruce Springsteen, and Mitt Romney joins forces with the Marshall Tucker Band. Superstorm Sandy has kept kids out of school this week. New York City public schools are scheduled to reopen. And actor and playwright Sam Shepard will be 69. Happy birthday. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. With basically 3 days left until the election, there is still a slice of the voting public out there that isn't satisfied, hasn't been completely won over by one candidate or the other. Olalla Njenga is one of them. I met her Monday during a live show we did in Raleigh, North Carolina this week. She runs a marketing firm there. She's got 3 people working for her with plans to add more, but her candidate of choice just isn't telling her what she wants to hear. So we got her on the phone to figure out what might get her off of that fence. Olalla, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So now let's see. You are a small business owner. You are technically, you say, an undecided voter, right?
Yes, technically, although I've been trying to move the needle for the past couple of days.
Well, talk to me about that, because you don't have too much more time to decide.
Well, for me, it really came down to 3 things, which is every plan needs a what, a why and a how. And that's really important because that's what my company does when we make strategic plans. And so I really need to support something that I understand how it will be implemented and what I can expect as a result. And unfortunately, Mr. Romney has failed that test. I had been holding out hope, and it's taken three debates and a storm, and he still has not given us that information.
What can he tell you, though, at this point? I mean, it's been 2 years that this campaign's been going on. How can it be that with, what, 3.5 days left, you are still undecided?
You know, I think Romney has a lot of qualities that are pretty admirable. He is a leader. He does understand that. He understands money. That was a big thing for me. There's a difference between understanding math and understanding money. He thinks about it from the perspective of a business. So, yes, I mean, I could be swayed at the 11th hour.
Here's what I'm thinking. I think you wait till Tuesday and you hope that somebody in the Romney campaign hears this show and you get a call.
And you know what? It's a call I would gladly take. I'll give him my private mobile number.
If he calls you, you got to call us, all right?
Oh, are you kidding? Right. You guys will be on speed dial.
All right. What is your biggest fear, then, about the next 4 years economically?
It's really personal. My daughter will be graduating from college in just a couple months. And she called me about a week ago, and she said, Mom, if I graduate from college after spending all this time and all of your money, and I do not have a job, will you create a job for me at your company?
Wow. That's putting it right to you. What'd you say?
You know, as a parent, my biggest fear is that she'll be done in a couple months and won't have a job, and her brother, who will be done in 2 years, won't have a job either, and that we will have, you know, really painted a picture for them of hope and opportunity, and that there won't be enough of the world left when they come out of college to celebrate anything.
You didn't answer the question, though. You're going to give her a job if she needs one?
Oh, absolutely. All That's right, without question.
Right, just checking.
It's a family business, whether
right.
I want it to be or not.
That's right. Well, Lala Jenga is in Raleigh, North Carolina. She is the CEO and Senior Marketing Strategist at Yellowwood Group. Lala, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
You want to hear that election roadshow we did this week from North Carolina? The audio for it is on our website at the link that says Marketplace Live. It's online at marketplace.org. With more than a million homes and businesses still without power in New Jersey, most schools are closed. Evacuation orders are keeping people out of their homes. State troopers are on the streets to discourage looting, so it's safe to say there is no normal in New Jersey this week. Dan Gorenstein reports, though, that doesn't keep small businesses from trying real hard.
You can hear things this week at Francoli's Pizza in Toms River, New Jersey, you don't typically hear, like owner Lisa Murdoch punching her calculator to tally up a sale. The little relic of a food processor that's grinding 100 pounds of mozzarella one chunk at a time. And the tiny generator humming out behind the shop. The generator may be small, but it's huge for Murdoch. Not because she has to open, but because she needs to.
It makes me feel like I'm actually doing something instead of sitting home. What am I doing at home? Looking at the trees outside, you know? Yeah, but no delivery, Sarah.
This part of New Jersey's a mess. People have lost their homes, trees and power lines are down. It's hard to get gas. Police have started IDing people because there's looting.
I don't even know how to explain it. It's not even like the loss of houses. It's watching people in such despair.
There's not much Murdoch can do to fix all that, but she can open her doors, and people have started trickling in.
Us being here is like a sense of normalcy, like, okay, I can't get in my bed because it's soaking wet, but at least I can have my pizza. Like, it sounds stupid, but it's little. It's like the little things.
Customer Joe Mahan says it's not stupid to him or his little girl.
So my daughter, before I left, are you getting a pizza from the pizza clock? And I said, yes, I am. It's a comfort food. That's what people need right now is comfort.
Comfort provided by Murdoch and her tiny little generator. In Toms River, I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
The corporate fairness question of the day comes to us courtesy of the rapper Eminem, and it goes a little something like this. Should musicians get paid less on a percentage basis when you download a song from iTunes instead of buying an actual album from an actual store? That is the issue at the heart of a settlement between Eminem's producers and his label, as Marketplace's Queenie Kim reports.
This case revolves around one big question. Are digital music stores like iTunes buying music from Universal, much like brick-and-mortar record stores, or are they licensing it? That distinction determines how much money an artist gets. If it's a sale, depending on the musician, they get a 5 to 20% cut. But if it's a license, Jay Cooper is an entertainment attorney in Los Angeles.
Then the provision of the vast majority of the contract said we pay the artist 50% 5-0.
Universal and most major music companies have argued that the digital downloads are sales. Eminem's producers claimed otherwise. Richard Bush is their attorney.
Unlike with physical product that is sold by a record label, where they have incremental costs.
Such as a jewel case, the physical CD, the record cover art.
Just like other licenses, record labels have no incremental costs. They provide a digital file to iTunes, and iTunes then does the work.
The courts agreed. And this week, Universal and Eminem's producers reached a settlement. David Given is an attorney representing musicians like Dave Mason, Traffic, and the late Rick James in a class action lawsuit against the Universal Music Group.
Good news as far as that goes. It sort of sets the bar for anything that we do in our case.
Attorneys say this could help older artists whose contracts were written up before the digital age. I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
Politics in this country often comes with a soundtrack, and on the Republican side, it sometimes has a twang to it. Blake Farmer from WPLN reports from Country Music's Capital City.
In a black and white Western shirt with 6-inch fringe on the sleeves, Lee Greenwood has been belting his time-tested hit in just about all the swing states.
Sing it! I'm proud to be an American, where at least I
I've been in Ohio and Minnesota and Colorado and in Florida, and we're probably going to go to Wisconsin and back to Ohio and New Hampshire before we finish this on Sunday and Monday.
Greenwood first got political during the Reagan years and says he's since become more aligned with the Republican Party.
Toured with John McCain and Bob Dole, Sarah Palin, and I'm a conservative Christian, and I believe that it would be out of context if I was on the other side of the aisle.
Greenwood's in good company on the campaign trail this year with folks like John Rich and the lead singer from Alabama performing at events.
If you look at all of these folks supporting Romney this year, Rodney Atkins, the Oak Ridge Boys, Hank Jr., of course.
Historian John Rumble of the Country Music Hall of Fame says the big names largely sing from the same songbook these days. Who can blame them? Rumble recalls what happened to the Dixie Chicks in 2003 when they criticized President Bush and the Iraq War.
Their sudden disappearance from radio after all this tremendous success, I think, threw not just a bucket but a barrel of cold water on so many other country artists who might have been more vocal about supporting Democratic or independent candidates.
Enjoy the Hall of Fame, and hopefully you'll come back.
Country music fans who flock to Nashville by the busload seem to have no problem with their rhinestone rockers getting political.
If they were on the stump for Obama, yes, but Romney, no. It's a good thing.
There you go.
Pat Sandrini and her husband are farmers in California's Central Valley. From San Angelo, Texas, Wiley Norton and his mother-in-law, Judy Davis, say the themes found in country music are what they hold dear.
Well, God, guns, and family.
And you don't hear that in, like, rock music or pop or any of that.
A few country artists have tried to ride the campaign wave this year, writing music just for the occasion. The first track on a new release from the ever-outspoken Hank Williams Jr. is called Taking Back the Country.
Hey, Barack, pack your bags, head to Chicago. Take your trailer pumping with you so you'll know where to go.
There have been loud and proud Democrats in country music, but they're generally not the household names. And those who sound potentially sympathetic have sidestepped specifics. Superstar Carrie Underwood has politely declined to talk politics since disclosing her support for gay marriage this year. Plenty of artists say they don't want to alienate any fans, Some can't afford to.
And honky-tonk like me.
Nashville street performer Mike Slusser says an Obama zinger might get him cheers, but he doesn't go there.
And it's dangerous game politics because you have to appeal to everybody.
Mandolin Mike counts himself to be typical of country music fans, blue-collar with traditional values, but he also thinks people consider themselves open-minded.
I think the main thing about country people is common sense is the value.
And common sense, Slusser says, isn't owned by one party or the other. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
Democrats have their soundtrack, too, you know, and we've got one version of it on our website, a made-just-for-us video by the indie rock band The National. Check it out. It's their song Blood Buzz, Ohio. It's pretty good. Marketplace.org is the website.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, in which we learn that for all of the digitized electronic trading it does, Wall Street is still an analog operation in a lot of ways. I saw on John Carney's blog today at CNBC that the headquarters of the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation are still underwater. Might not mean much to you until I say that in its basement vault, that is, its flooded basement vault, it's got 1.3 million shares of stock and bonds and foreign securities, paper shares, that is. Got to figure they're pretty much mush by now, right? Spokeswoman does say they've got an electronic inventory of them, though. Also, out of New York today, the marathon has officially been canceled by Mayor Mike Bloomberg. All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow off 139 points, 1%. The NASDAQ off 37 points, 1.25%. The S&P 500 lost 13 points, 0.9%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, in the wake of Sandy, don't believe everything you hear.
These folks, they'll create a URL that sounds a whole lot like a legitimate charity.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.